Okay. Should I be here or here? Is this thing mobile? I need a I'll work off the table. That's more impersonal. All right, so we'll just do this. This will be fine. Oh yeah, if we could move it forward, just that I'm tall and the table's so short. Yeah, there we go. It feels too impersonal over there. We don't need the microphone. Okay, great. Now, I was asked to speak tonight about raising teens. I want to start by saying I am not an expert on raising teens. All right. In fact, I've taught on this topic a few times, and the first time I did, I thought, why are they asking me? I know nothing about this. But then I thought about it. Well, actually, I've been to at least 10 retreats on parenting, and I have read 6, 7, 8 books on parenting, and I did raise 3 kids through the teen years. So maybe I've learned a couple of things, you know. But there are people I think are more qualified, but I'm going to do the best job I can and give you some advice. Now, there's a story about the guy. He was a brand new preacher. He went into a church. And he hadn't had any kids yet, but the church needed a class on parenting, so he read a bunch of books, and he gave a class, and the title was How to Raise Children. Then a few years later, he and his wife had some kids, and they were young, and they realized, wow, maybe it's a little bit tougher than that, but there was a need to teach the class again. And then, so he taught it again, but this time the title was Advice for Parents. Then his kids became teenagers, and he was in the midst of that whole deal, and it had been a few years, so again, it came around, they had to do a class on parenting. This time he taught the exact same class, and the title was Hope for Parents. Yeah, it's a tough deal raising teens, and are the kids here? Oh, good, I'm glad, because I'm not sure if I want them to hear what we're about to say, teen years can be tough. I mean, oh my goodness. And let me just tell you right off the bat, of our 3 kids, only 2 have actually been baptized in our disciples. One of them still is not. So I'm not here the picture of perfection or anything like that. But I've learned a few things, and hopefully I can give you at least a little bit of help here. Now, let's go to Ephesians 6:1. All right, very familiar verse, especially to parents, right? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for that is right. That's a great scripture when your kids are 3 years old. When your kids are 8 years old, it's pretty great. But when your kids are teens, that passage is really, you know, not too helpful, not really. Actually, a lot more helpful when your kids are teens is Ephesians 6:4. It says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Now, for those of you who don't have teens yet, I want you to know that it's a lot easier raising up small children. Wow. Now, it's more work. In fact, there's a great analogy between raising kids and being pregnant. Not that I know anything about being pregnant. All right? Because from what I understand, the first few weeks of being pregnant, you're tired all the time and sick. That's what it's like when they're tiny, tiny little babies. And then from about the middle of the 2nd month through about the 6th month of the pregnancy, it's actually not that bad, and it's almost fun in a way. That's what I hear. That's when they're, you know, 3 through about 8 or 9 or 10. And then the last 2 months or so of the pregnancy is hell, and it's suffering, and all you know is you want to get it out of there. That's teenage years. All right, I'm exaggerating, but only a little bit, actually. I have this theory. This is not in the Bible. This is my personal little theory. And this is true in the human world, but in the animal world as well. The children of all animals are cute. Even warthog babies are cute. And it's because that way the parents fall in love with the kids. But frankly, teenagers are not cute. They're downright ugly. Don't tell them I said that, by the way. The pimples are coming out and the shape is just not right, you know, and they're starting to have, the girls are starting to have the shape, but it doesn't really work very well. But I think, again, that's nature's way of saying, kind of kick him out of here. But the thing is, in our human culture, we've moved along to the point where, no, at 14 years old, at 13 year old, we're not going to kick him out of the house. There's no way, they're not ready. So what maybe evolution created, I don't want to get into the whole, is it evolution or whatever, I'm not going to get into that. But the bottom line is, the time that it's like, it's almost like you want them to leave, definitely they shouldn't be leaving because they're not ready to go out into the world. Now, another passage, another familiar passage, Proverbs 23, 13 and 14. Proverbs 23, 13 and 14. Okay, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he will not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. Another great passage when your kids are little. What about a teenager? What do you think? You have to punish a teenager with a rod? I don't think so. Because for a teenager, that would humiliate them. And one thing as a parent, you never want to humiliate your children. Never, ever humiliate your children. That's not acceptable. So my point is, you know, by the time we're in the teens, we've kind of transitioned away from Ephesians 1. We've kind of transitioned away from Proverbs 23, 13 and 14 and Proverbs 22, 6. And then, so what are our scriptures even? You know what I'm saying? It's hard to know what to do. You know, teens are easily exasperated. They have that passage. The kind of a theme passage for raising teens, I think, is Ephesians 6, 4. It is for me. Not just fathers, by the way, mothers as well, but I think particularly fathers. Teens are easily exasperated. They're frustrated with you in 2 seconds. So I want to start by asking, just thinking about how to raise teens, I want to start by asking, what's the goal? Okay? At this point, when they're little, you don't even have to really worry so much about what's the goal. Not really. I mean, yes, have it in mind, but you know, it's pretty simple. You know, take care of their needs, teach them to obey, train them in the physical things, you know, introduce them to God and the Bible. But when they're teens, it's more complicated. So what's the goal? That's an open question. What's the goal of parenting, especially teens, but in parenting in general? Okay, have them fall in love with God? Yes?
I would think one of the goals is to plant some seeds that no matter where they go in life, they will know that their parents love them.
Okay?
That God loves them.
Okay? Both correct answers. I don't think there's a single correct answer, so I'm pulling a number of correct answers out. Any other thoughts? So that they will love God. That's probably about the best answer you could have. This is also a great answer, is creating a situation so that when they leave, they'll always feel like the prodigal son felt, which is, I can always go back and be loved. That's a great answer. Other answers? Yeah.
Yeah, guide them using the word of God too, because they're just teens. They're neither children nor they're adults. They are in between.
Yeah, that's the method. I mean, but what's the goal? That's the method. I'm asking, what's the goal? Yeah.
To become disciple and faithful.
Okay, that they become a Christian and a successful one. Yeah.
That they equip them with the tools to live in the world.
Yeah. Now, if I were answering the question, that's the one that I would have given. Although, to be honest with you, I actually like this answer almost better than my answer or your answer, which is we want them to be equipped to live successfully separate from us. and to love God, to become a disciple, and all that kind of stuff. But just in a practical definition for me is, our goal as parents is so that we don't have to be parents anymore. So that they're fully functioning, mature adults. And that's true even if my daughter's not a disciple at this point. I mean, even though she's not a disciple, she still needs to be able to kind of deal with the world. All right, now, so the goal is definitely not that they obey you. Right? Remember when you're a kid, to teach them to obey and all that kind of stuff? As they're transitioning to teens, the last thing you need is for them to be obeying you. You know? But Sam, you have adult children. Is your goal... I think you might. Do you have adult children? 15 children? Or 15? All right. Who has an adult child here? Adult, I say, into their 20s, let's say. Okay? You do? All right. Do you want your children to obey you? You do, even now. I do not want my children to obey me. The last thing I want them to do is obey me. I want them to be able to think for themselves on what they need to do.
That's right.
All right? So I think the advice I want to give you is geared towards not the stuff that you'd be relevant when they're little, which is to obey and submit and follow your lead and be trained by you. But see, what you're doing is you're trying to get them to be independent. The thing is, that's what's so hard about the teen years, is somewhere between about 10, when they're about 90% dependent on you, and I don't know what the age is here. It varies by culture. I'm going to use the American number for what it's worth. Say around 18, when you want them to be, maybe 10 or 20% dependent on you instead of 90%. And that transition, it's painful and it's difficult. And navigating that, it's challenging. I'm sure that's true in every culture. All right. I'm sure it's different here. Of course, you have 16 cultures here in Dubai anyway, which makes it all quite interesting as well. So remember what the goal is. The goal is, and I let's combine all three of those. Those three together, I think, it really sums it up. Number one is you want to raise somebody who loves God. Why? Just because they love God. You want to raise somebody who feels loved by you and knows they're always safe to come home and to be accepted, even if they're doing things that they know you wouldn't agree with, and that they're trained and equipped to handle the real world and to be successful and that kind of stuff. All right? So I've got, let's see, how many points here? I've got, it looks like I have 5 points. They're pretty basic. And these are the things I've come up with. Somebody else might have a different outline. All right, point number one. The best thing you can offer to your teens, and by the way, point number one would be true for all ages. This one is generic across all ages of kids, is a good relationship between the parents. Okay? So the best thing you can offer to your children is a mom and dad who love each other and love God together. They need that relationship. They need that security. You know, teens are funny. They want you to think that they don't need you at all and they're totally independent. And yet that's not how they feel. Not at all. And I think some of the reason it's so hard is because you're trying to become yourself. That's what's going on here. Instead of being their parents' kids, they're becoming their self, and they're kind of in that in-between step. And so, which am I? Am I parents, my parents' kids, or am I myself? All right. And so, what they need is security. They need an example, obviously, but they need you to love each other. And obviously, we know that as we're parents, we tend to focus a lot of energy on the children and raising them and our relationship with them. And I get the sense that raising of children is very important to people here in Dubai just in general. They focus on the children. I know in India they focus huge attention on the children, yes, and their education, Philippines as well. But I'm telling you, if you give more attention to your children than you do to your wife, you're making a big mistake. Or to your husband. Don't do it. It's really tempting. It's really tempting to give more attention to your children, but don't do it. You have to give more attention to your spouse. And you need to be unified. Now, being unified, does that mean you agree with each other?
No.
No? Definitely not. My wife and I got to be honest with you, my wife and I, during the teen years, we had fairly significantly different philosophy about raising teens. And that's the toughest time in our marriage, I'll tell you right now. Absolutely. I mean, our marriage is going so smoothly and so awesomely and so amazingly now. I mean, it's great. But 10 years ago, man, it was pretty tough because we had a different philosophy. And to some extent, that's normal because I think the tendency is you tend to marry to somebody who's different from you. And it's kind of opposites attract. It kind of works that way. And I don't know, my thinking on that is that's God's way of making sure kind of you cover both sides of the deal. You know what I'm saying? So one is the disciplinarian, the other one's the nurturing one. It's not necessarily, interestingly, in our family, that was not a clear-cut distinction between Jan and I. But you need to present a united front to your children. Okay? Very important. Some of the stuff I'm telling you, you've heard 10 times. You know, I practically don't even just say it. But, you know, you need to back each other up. And to my shame, and it is to my shame, there were a number of times when our kids were in their teen years where my wife made a decision when I wasn't there regarding something with the teens, with our teens, and I didn't agree with that, and I let one of my teenagers know that before I talked to my wife about that. I'm just being honest with you. And it is to my shame. I mean, that's just about the worst thing you could possibly do. I mean, it's not quite up there with blaspheming the Holy Spirit, but that's a pretty bad sin. You need to support each other. You need to present a united front. Now, your teenagers are smart. They're going to know you don't agree. They're going to know that. And from the time they're 1 year old, they start using it against you. They may not be smart about algebra and physics and all that kind of stuff, but they're 200 IQ on working you against each other. It's just amazing. So the parents, your teenagers need to know that they cannot use one of you against the other. It's very, very important. So, as you know, you talk about the big issues away from the children. But, you know, as they're becoming teenagers, it's not 100% that. I think you can let your teenagers even be aware. You know, you can let them be aware even of some of the mechanics that's going on between you and your spouse, even about some of these issues. It's okay that your teenagers, especially when they're 16, 17, 18, that they understand that the two of you don't see it exactly the same, but here's what we're going to do. That's okay. That's actually healthy. You don't explain that to your 4-year-old. Forget it. You know, that's crazy. So the bottom line is the children need to see a united front. That doesn't mean you agree, and you don't even present the false impression that you agree necessarily, but you love one another. You got to get time away from the kids. You got to spend time praying together and just having dates. Don't forget that. So point number one is a good relationship between the parents. Point number two is the parents need to be close to God. I could have put that first, because is that in Proverbs or Ecclesiastes, you know, the cord of three strands and all that kind of stuff. I mean, again, point number two is quite obvious. One time, I would say probably the best marriage retreat I ever went to, it was put on by the Mantles. You might have heard of them. They were in Chicago. They're elders in L.A. now. And the whole marriage retreat was on humility. They didn't talk about marriage basically at all. They just talked about humility. And so in talking about parenting of teens, I'm starting by not talking about parenting teens really hardly at all. I'm talking about the parents being close to each other and the parents being close to God. You know, we need to lead by example in this area. Your teenager should see you having quiet times. Your teenager should see you praying. Going back to point number one, your teenager should see you hugging and kissing and touching. They're going to go, ew, yuck, disgusting. By this time, they know that you have sex, by the way. And at this point, you know, they know that you know, and you know, and yeah, they're going to not want to talk about it. They're going to not want you to bring up the subject, but they should know that you have sex. All right, they should know that, and that you enjoy it. Okay? Absolutely. How did that come from parents being close to God? I don't know how I got on that topic. Okay. Now, teens have certain kinds of radar. There's two kinds of radar I think teens have. One is for hypocrisy. The other one is for that's not fair. You know, justice, the idea of justice. So when it's not fair, again, they may not be smart in certain ways, but when it's not fair, they detect it instantly. And also hypocrisy. You know, you've heard it 100 times. You share your faith by doing, not by talking, and all that kind of stuff. The bottom line is, you need to be close to God. You have to be close to God. Because that's the example that you're setting more than your words and more than anything else. By the way, when they're teenagers, don't force them to have a quiet time with you. Don't do that. Don't do that. That's a mistake. So what age do you stop forcing, in quotes, forcing them? You know, forcing. With a kid, you don't call it forcing. You say, we're going to have a quiet time, and they obey you, right? So, but by the time you're a teen, again, it's a cultural thing. So I was about to give you an age. I'm not going to give you an age. I'll just say, there comes an age when forcing them to pray with you, you're not going to call it forcing, but that's what it comes down to. Because you're in a position of power. Bottom line is, in the family, you're in a position of power. So don't make them do that. I mean, they're adults with free will. And again, don't exasperate your children. If you associate a negative feeling with something you want them to do, if you do that again and again and again, they're going to associate the negative feeling with the thing you want them to do. And besides, you know, it's when they ask you to pray, that's what you want anyway. So I'm not going to give you an age. It's probably too culturally related. But I just say, you know, so you're going to show them that you're close to God, not by saying, let's pray together and you have this great prayer and kind of show them one up how much better your prayer is than them or something like that. And so you may not actually be praying with them all that often, the seniors. Maybe you will. It depends on the kid. You may not be doing it all that much, possibly. But they need to see you praying. And they need to know that you pray. And for example, even share what the prayer was and how it affected you. And it should come out. It's got to be real. You know, it's funny. I'm telling you, do this, and then you're supposed to follow those directions. But if you simply follow the direction, it's not real. Your teenager is going to pick it up in 1 second. They can sense a fake a mile away. Okay? These are quick points. I'm planning on only talking for about 35, 40 minutes, and so I'll have an extended question and answer, which I'll probably say I don't know at least half the time. Okay, point number three is humility. Remember I said that whole retreat about humility? We haven't gotten a whole lot in here about parenting of teens so far. Our points have been great relationship between the parents, great relationship between the parents and God, and point number three is humility. Alright? It's humbling to confess your sins to your 12-year-old. Well, you need to do it. You know? A father with a son, if you struggle with impurity, you tell your 14-year-old son you're struggling with impurity. That takes humility. You need to be teachable. Who knows you the best in the whole universe? Well, that's easy, God. Who knows you the second best? I think your children know you better than your spouse. Because they've known you their whole life. In some ways, your spouse knows you better. She or he knows more information about you, knows more of your history. But I think your teenagers, in many ways, know you better even than your spouse. So they're very effective disciplers for you. And you need to let them be disciplers for you. Now, I'm not saying you're on a, you know, equal level here. That's not what we're talking about. I'm going to talk about friendship in another point. Your parents before your friends. Until they leave the house. I think once the children leave the house, again, that's an American thing, so I don't know. Turn this into the version that works here. But at some point, eventually, finally, your friends before your parents. But throughout the teen year, let's just say throughout the teen years, your parents first and friends second. You're still authority. They still need to submit to you. They are not allowed to be rebellious. They're allowed to disobey because that's normal teenage activity. They're not allowed to rebel. Okay, or well, even that a little bit is normal. If they never rebel against you, they're kind of really weird. You should be worried about them. Okay,
yeah.
So apologizing is very important, and it's got to be real. It's got to be real. You know, you need to forgive their sins against you. They're going to sin against you. I remember my daughter saying to my mother, "I hate you. You're the worst thing that ever happened to me." Your teenagers will probably say something like that to you. Maybe not. I don't know. I remember one time, I'm not the type to be particularly volatile. That's not really my personality. And I'm really not a yeller. Not really. But I remember one time I yelled at my son. It was over his report card, you know, from school. And I laid into him, you know. And I looked in his eyes and I saw his eyes just sort of, it just, the look in his eyes like, you know, like I'm a failure. I'm disappointed in my dad. I'm a bad person. I just saw that and I realized, oh my God, you know, I really hurt my kid. And I apologized to him. And I said, "Ben, I feel terrible that did that." I said, "I promise you, I will never, ever yell at you ever again." Not only did I never, ever yell at my son again, but I never yelled at any of my kids ever again. And, I mean, that's good that I changed in that way, but it's even more important that my son saw that. Because that's Christianity being real. Your kids need to see you changing. Oh, that's point number four. That's point number four. But before I go on to that, I want to point out your children are going to sin. Okay? And your job is not to prevent them from sinning. Right? We already described what the goal is. Your job is not to prevent them from sinning. Your job is not to protect them from the consequence of the sin. On some level, of course it is. Of course it is. But on other levels, it's not. So to some extent, you know, they get to make their choices and sin. It's not your standard, but they're not a disciple. You know, they're not a disciple. They're not claiming to be a disciple. They're not a disciple. All right, so you know, if they're not a disciple, it's not really fair even to hold them to the standard of a disciple. I'm not saying you don't have standards. Of course you have standards. But your kids are going to sin. They're going to lie to you. All teenagers lie to their parents. Come on!
Yes.
Did you lie to your parents? I mean, that was... You lied. It was your second nature to lie to your parents. You lied when you didn't even need to lie to your parents. And believe it or not, even if your teenager becomes a Christian, he or she will lie to you. And you need to be able to deal with that. And not judge them, but also not get like, I'm a failure. This is normal. And your job is not to prevent this behavior. On some level, of course, it is. You know, on some level, come on, you know. They can't just go spend the night at their girlfriend's house, you know, or something like that. Of course, here that wouldn't happen anyway, but believe it or not, in America, that kind of stuff actually happens. All right, a second, Corinthians 13:5. They were under the subject of parents changing. It says, you know, examine yourself to see if you're of the faith. You know, having your teenagers become Christians, it's kind of like you becoming a Christian all over again. They need to see you changing. And let me tell you something important to remember. The changes you made when you became a Christian, the teenagers, that's nothing to them. That doesn't help the slightest bit. You say, oh yeah, back then when I became a Christian, they give you zero credit for that. Frustrating but true. Okay? No, they need to see you changing right now. And luckily for us, there's plenty of things to change. Alright? And so, but it needs to be happening. You need to be growing spiritually. It's almost like you should wait on changing spiritually until they get the teen year so you can kind of... No, I'm just kidding. But I'm serious. You need to focus in on having God change your life in visible ways that your kids can see, that they know is happening. You talk to them about it. That kind of stuff. So they need to see Christianity lived out in front of them. And I believe that that's a very, very important thing. That will make it real to them. And that's part of your job. That's how you live out true Christianity in front of your children. It's not by, you know, following certain rules and going to church, although you definitely should be going to church. All right. Now, point number five, my last point. This is the longest point. I've got more items under this point. Is friendship between parents and teens. I think that's really important. Friendship. A kind of relationship where you're transitioning towards being a friend. Now remember, I said, as long as they're teenagers, and maybe even longer depending on the culture, I guess teenagers, does it end when they're, I guess, 19? Are they still a teenager? In America, you're not a teenager at 19. I'm just telling you, in America, you're not. You're a teenager until you're about 17. I don't know what it is here, so you apply it as you will. But as long as they're teenagers, you're parents first and friends second. Okay? And I'm not taking away from that at all. And you should not ever take away from that. You know, as the father, you're the head of the house. As the mother, you're the right at the side of the father. And if he's not there, you're the total authority. And when he's there, you're a team. And the kids need to understand that. And that needs to be clear. But you need to be friends. And what do friends do? Well, first of all, they listen. That's for sure. You need one-on-one time with your teens. Both mom and dad need one-on-one time on a regular basis with each of your teens separately, if you can possibly do it. I'll share about my daughter, Kate. From the time she was in, I think, ninth grade or maybe eighth grade, every Monday night we would go to Starbucks together. And she got on coffee a little bit too young probably, but that's... And we would spend sometimes hours. And she'd be studying some. I'd be reading a book or writing a book or something like that. We might spend two-thirds of the time not even talking. It didn't matter. We're just hanging out together, kind of getting to know the people there. We made friends that were just friends of ours that we kind of, they're kind of regulars there. And we just talk. And we mainly talked about things that she was interested in. We also talked about things that I was interested in. And, that was not a discipling time. It was just a friendship time. And, so one of the things I was doing is helping her to learn how to think about things. Isaiah 118, where God says, come, let us reason together. Let us reason together. And you're helping your kids learn how to think about things, but it's by friendship. Now, I'll tell you right now, one of our three kids, that didn't work very well. I'm just going to be honest with you. And that's my son. I don't know what it is about my son. He's just, you know, He just doesn't open up. I mean, he's 27 years old, and he still doesn't open up to me. It's really tough. Still, you know, I go with him snowboarding together. We do fun stuff together. But to be honest with you, our one-on-one fun time is not as productive just simply because he won't open up. And I don't know, what am I going to do? That is challenging. But with my other two, you know, we have these times a lot. And we're mainly listening. We do some teaching. But you know what? When your teenagers share their problems, don't just tell them what to do about it. That's not what they want. What they want is for you to say, it'll be okay. That's what they want and that's what they need. It'll be okay. Or say, what do you think you should do about that? That's so much better. Because then, you know, because they need to get the sense that you're not telling them what to do. When you tell them what to do, they resent it. Now, secretly, they want you to tell them what to do. They won't ever tell you that. And, you know, and some of that's okay. But, you know, so, there, you know, my daughter would share what this person did at school, and this person said this, that. I really feel like there was almost nothing. But not nothing, by the way. Not just almost nothing. There's going to be a few things they don't tell you. Like the fact that her sister was drunk and she took the car from us, even though she didn't have a driver's license, and stole the car and went and got her and brought her home safely without telling us. You know how you know how bad it was? It's by how old they are when they tell you. You know, when they tell you when they're 16, you know, when they tell you, wait till they're 25 years old to tell you, that's the really bad one. By the way, yes, that did happen. Yes, my daughter got plastered drunk at the age of, I don't know, 17. And yes, her sister, she called her sister on her cell phone. And yes, she snuck out, pushed the car down the driveway so it couldn't be heard. And then rolled down the street, turned it on, went and got her and brought her home, put her in bed. And, you know, and we didn't find out about that for a few years. Friendship. My middle one, the older daughter, I drove her to school. I drove her to school every day. And by the way, she was in a lot of trouble. She ended up in the school that the bad kids go to. Here I am, a Christian, you know, and she ended up in the school the bad kids go to. She's a tough one. You know, when she got into her 20s, she said to my wife, she said, "Mom, I was really bad, wasn't I?" We said, "Yep, you were really bad." But you know what? She's the most responsible of our children. She loves God. She comes to church when she comes home, and she's going to be a disciple someday. I believe she will. But you know, when we're driving to school, we listen to her music. You know, listen to your kids' music. When my daughter was reading a book, I would read the book. And I would go to the movies they went to. One of my experiences, this is pretty funny. There was a movie, this was several years ago, it was called Mean Girls. Okay, Mean Girls. And I took my daughters to Mean Girls. Alright, that's a good thing to do. The problem was, it was sold out, except for a few seats. And we get in there, there were two seats together over here. My girl sat in there right away. And so I sat by myself somewhere else. So here's this 53-year-old guy sitting around a bunch of middle school girls. They must have thought I was really creepy, you know, alone at this young teenage chick flick. But I won 100 points with my girls. Can you imagine? Okay, so a friendship. They need to feel like you really like being with them. Do you always like being with them when they're teens? Well, not always. That middle daughter, I did not like much of her music at all. As a funny story, for Christmas one year, she made a CD. She made a mix of the music that she thought I'd like. And what it was the music of hers that I tolerated enough that I kind of liked. She thought that I would think that was a great thing. But you know what? I felt really good about that. You know, being friends. Here's a touchy subject. Not being legalistic about clothing styles and makeup and the movies they go to and the music they listen to. Okay? Now, I'm not going to give you specifics because the specifics would be specific to your culture, so I'm not going to do anything like that. Okay? I'm not going to do it. Alright, so I'm not going to say what they can or cannot wear, what makeup they can. If you ask me, I probably will just simply not answer the question. But I would say this, let me give you just generic advice. Alright, here's what especially the girls wear, and it's like, oh my God. And you know the boys are looking at them. And you know even where they're looking. Now, probably in an American school, if an American girl were wearing those clothes, nobody would look at them at all. So I'm saying, that's why I can't tell you the length, or I can't tell you. All right, there's that. Here's what you as parents want them to look like. Would be kind of like a nun in a convent. All right? And I say, let's aim right in the middle. Right in the middle. The reason is, if you aim right in the middle, the boys aren't going to be constantly looking at your girl. They're going to be looking at these girls. And she'll feel beautiful. And your girls have a right to feel beautiful. Now, I as a guy, I know that that's probably a little bit naive, to be honest with you. Because I know how guys are, because I'm one of them. All right, that's just my advice. And I would say that's kind of a generic advice, and it is totally generic. I'd apply that to music styles. I'd apply that to the makeup and all those things. Is there's no way your boys or girls are going to be over here. No way. But forcing them to be over here, they're going to resent it. I don't want to overstate it. For the rest of your life, on some level, they're going to, you know what they're going to do? When they get out from under you, they're going to swing over there. And that's not what you want. So they need to be able to exploit. They need to be able to make mistakes. In terms of discipline, there's still going to be discipline. Obviously, there's still going to be discipline. But it should be fair. You know, the penalty should fit the crime. You know, at times, if you asked your teenager what the penalty ought to be, they might actually tell you harder than you were planning. I believe in letting your teenagers, depending on the age, be involved in deciding what the discipline will be. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Partly because if they decide it, you know, they've got nothing to resent you for. You know? I'm not saying they get free rein here, but I'm just saying that at some age, you know, they possibly could even have some input, you know, into what the discipline will be. Okay? And, you know, you can't be any, you know, it's like the story of Brer Rabbit. You know about Brer Rabbit, right? Oh, never mind. I won't go into that story. But. So, fairness is important. You still will have discipline. But I would say this, you know, when we're looking at the discipline, disciplining the actions is less important. Obviously, the attitude is more important. And the one thing you still need to have almost 100% handle on is rebellion. You know, just outright rebellion. You know, that kind of stuff. You know, where you know, these kind of things. Those are unacceptable. Those are just plain unacceptable. I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they can wear. All right, you can wear those clothes. All right. All right. Yeah, you can be with that friend. That's okay. But you can't be rolling your eyes at me and stomping your feet. And rebellion, I'd say all the way through. Basically, I'd say rebellion is a total no-no until they reach the age in which they don't rebel anymore, you know? At some point, they're not, believe it or not, at some point your kids aren't going to rebel against you because there's nothing to rebel against anymore, right? Because you're not in control anymore. All right, what about, you know, boyfriends and girlfriends and all that kind of stuff? Well, that's a tough one. And what I would say is probably the church here should reach some consensus on these kinds of things. All right, but you know, every family is different. I think the church should allow each family to be different, to make their own decisions, but I think arriving at some kind of consensus relevant to your culture would be good. I'll just share one story, and this may be so different from anything that would apply to you. Just take it as a story, and you just use it as an application that works in our situation. One of our daughters, the one I already kind of share, you kind of figure who she is, she definitely could not have any boyfriend at all anywhere in high school, because the choices she would have made would have been completely unacceptable, period. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, basically we had this discussion. I mean, you know, you could, but, you know, it didn't necessarily have to be a Christian. Our youngest daughter, she was... I'll just tell one story about her. When she was in eighth grade, she wanted to go to another church's youth group. We said, sure, go for it. You know, come on. I mean, why not? So she went. She went every week. She also went, by the way, to the Bible talk, the teen Bible talk. She went to it. So, I mean, you know. And here's a funny story. She'd been going there for about a year. And one night, the sort of the teen minister guy said, tonight we're all going to become Christians. We're all going to pray Jesus into your heart. And he told them the sinner's prayer and blah, blah, blah. And all the kids did it except our daughter Kate. And they said to her, why aren't you doing, they didn't say the sinner's prayer, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you becoming a Christian? She said, that's false doctrine. She never went back. Never went back. That was not a mistake to let her go to that other youth group. It was not. Because if we told her she can't go, she wouldn't have had that experience. Okay? But then she was in either 10th grade or 11th grade, I can't remember, and there was this boy she liked. She wanted to have him as her boyfriend. And we let her. He was a very respectful kid, a smart kid, a good in school, wasn't a Christian. I think he went to church, but you know, he wasn't a Christian, and we let her have a boyfriend. All right, that was tough, but you know, it lasted for about 2 months, and the thing is, she had a great relationship with her father. Here's a key thing: if the teenage girl has a close relationship with her father, she's not going to look for boys. And if a teenage boy has a close relationship with his mother, he's not going to be looking for girlfriends. None of our three kids has ever been the type who needed to have a boyfriend or needed to have a girlfriend. So for our girl, we let her do it simply because we trusted this boy. Now, I didn't totally, are you kidding? Totally trust? I wouldn't totally trust a teenage Christian boy.
That's
come
right.
on.
That's right.
They have hormones going, and they're sinners.
Yeah.
So she wasn't going on single dates with him. She wasn't going on. They were doing group dates. That's all they were doing. He would take her to the dance there, and they had this thing. They would go dancing with her other friends and stuff like that. That's what it was. Anyway, it worked out. You know, our daughter Kate, she didn't become a Christian while she was home with us in high school. It was her first year at the university. It was tough sending her off. But I was going to speak for the church up there in Santa Barbara, and we got a call. I was going up that weekend and said, Dad, can you come a day early? I'm going to be baptized. Yeah. Her sophomore year at the university, 10 girls that she studied got baptized. 10. And she's working as an intern for the church. So giving her a little bit of freedom, especially if they earn it. To be honest with you, their other daughters, the bottom line, she just didn't earn the trust. And so she was not allowed to have a boyfriend. And do you think she might have resented her sister being able to have a boyfriend? But because we discussed it openly, she kind of knew. The bottom line is, if that's the kind of kid you want to have as a boyfriend. Now, she could have him as a boyfriend. At school, you have, you know, now this is America, so it might be a little bit different, but in America, if somebody wants to have a boyfriend or girlfriend at school, you know. Okay. couple other things. This is under the general heading of friendship, but it's just sort of miscellaneous other kinds of advice. Hospitality. Your home needs to be the one that all the teens want to come to.
That's right.
That's absolutely essential. I remember the teens were over our house, a bunch of them, and they landed on the couch and broke it in half. All right, cool, no problem. But when we were getting a new couch, my son's best friend, we asked him for advice on what couch to get because he slept on it two or three nights a week. Okay. And can you imagine the amount of money we spent on food because our house was the one that all the teens came to? By the way, that's the Christian, in quotes, teens, and that's the non-Christian teens, both. Your house just needs to be a fun place to come where the parents, that they're not hovering all the time. But, they're kind of in there some and out of there some. They're not out of the house, but I don't mean they have the run of the house. I'm just saying it should be a really fun place where they come over, they can watch movies, maybe they can, play ping pong or whatever. We had a foosball table, those kinds of things. And food, especially food. And parents that aren't constantly correcting their kids and telling them to turn down their music. Although there's got to be a limit, obviously. So hospitality. And by the way, not just hospitality for teens. Hospitality for everybody and everything. To use the American expression, your house should be like Grand Central Station. And I'll tell you, even now, our house is like Grand Central Station. And our kids are so proud of that. They're so proud of the fact that our house was where people were constantly coming and going. We have an American holiday called Thanksgiving. I don't know if they have anything like that here. And we would have the craziest guests of all sorts, Christians, non-Christians. If they have, our daughter had a boyfriend that we didn't like. This is the sort of bad daughter had a boyfriend we didn't like. He's invited for Thanksgiving. Of course he is. Okay? Hospitality. Another thing is relationships with the spiritual teens, that you need to do that. Now, before we moved to San Diego, we were about 60 miles away from the church. That's why we moved, by the way. I refused to have teenagers, and we're 50, 60 miles away from the other kids. But before we did that move, I was driving 60 miles back and forth all the time because I need my kids to be around the spiritual kids. And also, I want to urge you, if possible, to kind of get a mentoring situation. Now, you don't really have a campus ministry here at all, essentially, correct? And there's a reason for that. I understand. This is about the hardest city in the world to have a real campus ministry. So I'm not being critical of that. That's just the way it is. So maybe you could set up some sort of a singles kind of, not mentoring exactly, a big brother, big sister thing for the teens.
Yeah.
Because they need an older sort of a role model.
That's right.
They're not the parents. And when you have teen workers, the teen workers are not the parents. And I'm sorry, you decide the discipline, not the teen workers. All right? Period. They're there for support. It's your job. They're just helping you out. They're a great help. But, get some kind of mentoring situation going with your teens. If it has to be somebody even older, there's some people in the church, even though they're in their 30s and 40s, they are actually relatable to younger people. Maybe you're not, but hopefully they are. And so you could hook them up in that way. So I want to suggest you do that. Having a spiritual best friend, support the teen workers, don't punish them by denying them teen activities, try to be cool, I don't know, it's impossible, but try anyway. Alright, last scripture and then we'll open up for questions. Galatians 6:9. Galatians 6:9. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. You can't give up on your teens. And when they're 20 years old, you can't give up on them. When they're 30 years old, you can't give up on them. By the way, if one of your kids doesn't become a Christian, that doesn't mean you were a bad parent or you're a failure. It doesn't mean that. And by the way, if you have families in the church and their kids, one of them or whatever, is not a Christian, don't you make them feel like they're a failure, because that's not fair. That's not fair. A good friend of mine, Joe and his wife Carolyn Fields, you may have heard of them. They had three kids, and two of their kids are great, amazing leader Christians, and their other kid is a total disaster. It's really bad. All right. And does that mean that Joe and Carolyn did a lousy job? I know. I mean, he's one of the most amazing dads. He is incredible. So obviously we want all of our kids to become Christians, and it's the hope that they will, and you know, there's a good chance that they will, okay?
Yeah.
But you know, if you have a kid who's 20 or 30 or even 40 not a Christian, you can't be living a depressed life. You still need to be living a successful Christian life. And it does not mean you're a failure. It doesn't mean that you don't love your kids and they don't love you, because you will still love your kids, and even if they're worldly, they'll still love you. So, I just want to deal with that. I want to get that out. Even if somebody is, in the ministry in quotes or whatever, that doesn't mean all their kids are going to become Christians. I think we should bear that in mind. So, do not give up. All right, so we can do some question and answer. I warned you, I probably will say I don't know, or I refuse to answer that question occasionally, but we can go for questions and answers. Yep, I did. I only spoke for about, for about 40 minutes, like I said. Yeah?
It's not a question. I just want to thank you for doing this lesson, because of all the things that you are saying that is happening to me right now, because I have a teenager. Like singing in the car with the song, with those bleep words, you know, like I get to sing with them, but
you don't sing the bleep words, don't they?
No, not the bleep
words.
I get sometimes I'm
a, blah blah blah, blah blah blah.
Should I sing with them? This is bad. Should I watch zombie movie with them? Should I let them play the killing stuff in the PS3? It's like it's not
right,
cool.
Yeah.
So all those things, yeah. But we try to control, but
yeah.
Most of the times I nag them to stop doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I think I have to chill a little bit.
Yeah. By the way, for the standard in our home was, no, you cannot play those songs that have bleep words in them.
Yeah.
You cannot in the car. And there's plenty of, they say that's all the songs, but that is a lie, and they know it's a lie.
Yes.
They're just telling you that lie. I don't know why they do that. So, no, definitely not. But I get your point. You're saying, thank you for helping me to chill out at least a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're welcome. Yeah.
I don't have a teenager yet, but I'm trying to
anticipate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what if, for example, you caught them in the act of drinking alcohol? How are you going to?
That's an interesting one. Our good daughter. The one who was really, actually, we had three kids. Our son was quite easy, relatively. He was a pretty good kid the whole time. He really only went through one kind of rebellious, I don't want to be a Christian period. And then our younger one was fairly easy. So it was Kate. One thing that, I think I might have mentioned this, that whenever I go away and travel to teach for churches, that's when really bad stuff happens. It's been the whole time. And this is our youngest, so she was in 11th grade, I think, and she was with her friends, and she got plastered drunk. All right, so anyway, thing is, we had the kind of relationship, she wasn't afraid of us. So her friend called us her non-Christian friend called us and said, you know, Kate's really drunk. You know, she needs your help, basically. But I wasn't there. It was Jan. It was my wife. Anyway, so we brought her home, sobered her up. The next day, she wasn't in trouble with us. She wasn't. She thought she was dead meat. But I said to her, Kate, you've been the greatest kid ever. You do something really stupid one time. What are we going to do? Ground you for 6 months? We basically said, Kate, you get basically one freebie on this one. She laughs about that even today. We didn't even discipline her. That might sound crazy, but I don't know. I look back on that, and I think it was the right choice. I mean, she was such a good kid. You know? On the other hand, if she was sneaking out and getting drunk all the time, then I would have an absolute zero tolerance policy, and we'd set up situations to make sure that it never, ever happens again. So every kid's different. Every kid gets treated differently. So believe it or not, I think we might have done some really, really slight discipline, but I can't remember if we even did. Basically, we said, Kate, that was a really dumb thing to do. And she said, you know what? That was the dumbest thing I ever did. And she never drank again. Even now, she's 22, almost 23. And, she's a Christian. She's a very faithful disciple. She could drink a beer or a glass of wine or something like that, but she almost never does because she doesn't want to. So, again, there's each situation is different, but I just say think through really carefully about that. But believe it or not, in that one case, we let it go. There's a situation somewhat similar with our daughter, and we had a very strong reaction, and she was not able to be with these people for a long time and that kind of stuff. So I don't have a definite answer there. But you have to consider the child, consider the situation. And, you know, just because your kid does something bad doesn't mean you come down on them like a ton of bricks. So it might sound crazy, but believe it or not, we didn't discipline her. Because she felt so bad about what she did, for us that was good enough. That, by the way, because we did that, we guarantee you next time she'll tell us about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you so much. I have a daughter. She's 17, and she's a disciple, a great girl, a great disciple. A few things for me to ask advice that. Apologize. We do apologize for a certain time many things she noticed. Many things she noticed, but she just hint. And we say just sorry for it. I say sorry for it. Uh-huh. But do I sit and ask in detail?
You.
For example, she said that you promised many things, but you don't do it.
Okay. Yeah, I think you should do more than sorry. Yeah, you should do more than sorry. You should probably say you're sorry and then make up for it by doing something even better than what you'd originally said.
Many times I, again she says, you say it again, different subject.
Yeah.
Different subject.
Yeah, so your kid is being honest with you, and that's good. That's good.
Yeah, and second thing is, being conversing to your, of course I converse, but not everything.
Right, right. Selective.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is, they should be able to think of examples when you did confess to them. Careful, selective, wise. See what I'm saying? And fathers, don't confess to your daughter if you're struggling with sexual purity. Don't do that. I mean, that's I don't know. No. All right. So yeah, thank you for clarifying that.
One more. This is she has a friend who's we came from India.
Yeah.
We've been in the South for quite long, 20 plus years. So we have a friend, their children also, in the same age of her.
They also what?
Same age as my daughter.
Okay.
My friend's, my disciple's daughter.
Okay.
They're good friends.
Yeah.
They grew up together. Some of the parents has actually, you know, one of the girls won a lot of freedom. For example, you know, she goes, she comes and express, but parents totally take it negative and they both share. My daughter and they share. And
yeah, of course.
And tells me why the parent, why they don't, you know. And I consider my daughter, I don't want her to have a bitter attitude.
Yeah.
You know. That, so I try to speak to the parents, but it's not going well.
Yeah.
And so what do I advise?
Alright, yeah. My advice to that is the kids need to know that every family is different.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're different than us, and that's just the way it's going to be. Yeah. So, yeah, and even within the church, there'll be fairly different standards.
Yeah.
For example, in one case, I know that the evangelist who was leading our region, their standard for their kids is, at a certain age, if they didn't want to go to church, they weren't going to make them. But our standard at our house was, until you leave the house, which would be the American version of that, like 18, you go to church, and we go to church. Alright, you know, that's the way it is in our house. The fact that that's not the way it is in their house, and even though you're friends and they're the leaders of the church, so if anything, they should be. So what? That's beside the point. So you make your rules, you stick by them, and as long as they're fair, as long as they're reasonable, you just stick by them. And the kids can handle that. They'll tell you they can't handle that, but they can. They can definitely handle that. As long as they know what it, as long as they know what the standard is, they know you're going to stick by it, and they know what the consequences are if they don't stick by it, that's fair. So they'll tell you it's not fair, but in that case, they're wrong, it is fair. So I just stick to it. And you do not have to go to that other family and tell them, look, we're different, we need to agree. That, you don't have to do that. Okay?
Yeah, last one.
All right.
Some time ago, my daughter tried to get in touch with a brother in the church, be a boyfriend. Things went really wrong. But we dealt with it, she's happy. But sometimes, it's absolutely all right now. But sometimes she hit me, Dad, I won't have a boyfriend. I said, find one. You know? But she won't say something. But I keep looking, you know, some, hey, do you have somebody, do you have a friend, you can tell me. We are close, we speak.
Good.
But I'm concerned, I don't want to go, I have deep down in my heart, I want to find some Christian disciple way of boyfriend, but she don't have anyone now.
Yeah.
But, you know, but sometimes she say, I'd like to have boyfriend, not just real, but have friends, so, you know.
So do you have a question, or?
I said questions, like, she don't find anybody, she says, you should tell me, you know. So I don't want to say, go find this brother or this one.
Yeah, that's one of those I don't have any response to or answer to that. Good luck, brother. All right, yes.
When do you start talking to the child about
SEX? Sex, yeah, I'd say very early. Very early. Is there? Why are we saying SEX? Is there anyone? Is there anybody here who doesn't have sex? All right. Yeah. Now, again, this is coming from an American, but I think, as far as I know, sex is the same in every nationality has sex. It's more or less the same. So I'd say the sooner the better. Here's a rule of thumb, just a rule of thumb. If they're old enough to ask, they're definitely old enough to be told. Because at some age, they wouldn't even know what to ask anyway. But if they're old enough to ask, they're old enough to know the answer. That's one rule of thumb to go by. Another rule of thumb to go by is that you want them to learn from you, not from anybody else. And that's why earlier is always better. And your kids should feel very comfortable talking about sex with you, which they won't because they never are. But you need to be comfortable about it. The worst thing you can do is be uncomfortable about it. So I'll talk to my daughter about her period. You know, I do it sensitively, but, you know, of course, yeah. I'm not the one who had that talk about periods with her. That's if I was an only father, maybe. That's obviously the mom's job, but I'd say as soon as they're able to ask, that's a good rule of thumb. But if they haven't asked, then common sense says this: at what point did you learn about it? Well, subtract about a year or two, and then you start talking about it.
What if, for example, my son, he starts, it's P7, okay, we don't have CN. So it's anything to do with naked, or, you know, dolls being naked and stuff. So says, it feels like he's exploring, and then it came, he was talking, dinner, and
yeah.
He said, oh, this girl pulled down her pants.
Hmm? She pulled down her pants. All right. She's seven?
Yeah, they're seven.
Well, that's kind of unusual.
So I'm like, so what did you do? So we talked about it. You know, I think they were all messing about. So I did speak to the teacher. But it seems like it's a stage where it's like,
let me try to give advice, but I have no idea if this is the right advice. I'd say, just very approximately, at a seven-year-old girl, as a mom, you could say, the reason that there's certain clothes used to cover a certain part of the body is because there's something that goes on between adult boys and girls that involves those parts that when they're married, and because that's very, very private between the mother and the father, that's why we cover those areas. And so that, I think that's, you're not going into the mechanics of how you have sex.
Yeah.
But she's aware that, you know, the physical thing that a guy has and the physical thing that a girl has, that the reason we're covering them is not because we're ashamed of them, but because that's private between the mommy and the daddy. So you say, so at 7 years old, that doesn't apply to you, but we're training you to be aware of that, because when you're an adult, that's very, very important. For example, you wouldn't want mommy to have those things exposed to anybody other than daddy, right? And she would definitely agree with that. You say, well, okay. So I think you're talking about sex in the sense that, you know, it's something that between a mother and a father that involves certain parts of the body that they'll know, you know, they'll know which parts you're talking about. I think that seems appropriate to a seven-year-old. But then again, that's just my thinking. Some things are cultural, but I think this particular aspect probably wouldn't differ all that much with culture. I'm talking about the age. Now, what you would say would differ fair much with culture, but probably the age appropriateness would probably be pretty similar across cultures, I would think. All right, good. I'm glad you asked that question, because that needed to be raised. Okay, back there. Yes, no, you're the... Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes we have kids that during watching a movie like that, there are kissing scenes, and
yeah,
sometimes we cover the eyes and we close our eyes so that they will be accepted. Is it okay for them to...
Well, the main thing is they should see you and your wife kissing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes if in the movies, the actors, they are covering their eyes. Is it okay?
I that's another one. I'm just going to let you decide on that one. Okay. I don't have advice on that. Sorry, but I just don't have advice on that. You know. All right, go ahead.
I just want to clarify. You had mentioned that your daughter has a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Was she a Christian at the time?
Right, see, she wasn't a Christian. Now, if she was a Christian, that would have been different. And she was well aware of this. All right, thank you for pointing that out. Because if she had been baptized and was a Christian and a member of the church, then obviously she couldn't do that. But that wouldn't be our authority, that would be God's authority, which is a whole separate issue. Because if you have a kid who's not a Christian, in a sense, they're not under God's authority. Now, your little kids are, all right? But your teenager is... There's not like one day they aren't and one day they are. It's a transition, and it's a difficult transition to figure out, but they're coming into the point that technically they're not under the same authority that you are, because they're not a Christian and you are. Hopefully they will become a Christian. So that's why we felt like it was okay. Now, I'm not saying, therefore, you should do it also. Hopefully you got that, right? I was not telling you... Is that clear? I was not telling you should let your teenage girl have who's not a Christian yet have a non-Christian boyfriend. I did not say that. And if anybody says that I said that, I did not say that. And I want to be very clear, all right? That worked for us in that situation because of that particular daughter. And it's possible in your culture that would be outlawed for all girls in all families. That's a possibility. But yes, thank you for pointing that out. If your kid is not yet a disciple, then you realistically can't ask them to be a disciple. Because that's the decision they make, not you. So there's kind of two sets of standards. There's the standard that every kid has if they're in your home, whether they're a disciple or not. But if they become a Christian, there are other standards. But in that case, you're not the main person enforcing those standards. All right. So the parent doesn't say the kid is a disciple. Well, you're a disciple, so blah, blah, blah. You know, that's a sensitive subject. Okay, yes, and then you'll be next, Mina. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then along those lines, I have two girls who are 10 and 11. And right now, or at this stage, sometimes they say they have crushes. My wife and I, we know that it's just a phase, so we don't pay much attention to it.
Right.
But we're thinking down the line, 2, 3, 4 years, at what point do we have that sort of talk? Like right now, if they have a crush on somebody, fine. We just, it changes. But down the line, it might not. So my question is, do you permit that? 13, 14, 15 years of age?
To have a crush?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you not a relationship, a crush.
Yeah, you can't prevent it. Trying to outlaw something that you can't prevent, that's not a very good idea. I mean, they're going to have a crush on somebody.
Okay, yeah.
They'll probably have a crush on somebody in the church, it's the most likely, but they might have a crush on somebody else, and how can you prevent that? I mean, so it's more like you're preparing them for that, yes?
Great.
Yeah. I think, although your standard about dating and all that, which, by the way, you guys as a church work on this, I don't want to give even the slightest hint of a policy on dating here for your teenagers, okay? But I'd say, as they're coming into those teenage years, they should kind of be aware of what that policy is going to be as they get into the teenage. So the 11-year-old is aware that, you know, as they're coming into high school, this is how we're going to handle it. It can change a little bit. It doesn't matter if it changes, actually. Just so that you can help them kind of think how it's going to go. But an 8th grade girl is going to have a crush on a boy. So what? I'm not sure. Maybe I'm not understanding your question, maybe.
No, you answered it quite well. It's about a crush on a relationship. But I have another question.
All right.
We're a very multicultural church.
Yeah.
The extremes are as far left, as far right as you can get.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's very difficult.
Wow.
Because this is what Dubai is, and it's Sin City on top of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have a question, though, that pertains to the Philippine culture. Sorry, no offense. It becomes common when they say, yeah, he's a gay, she's a gay. And my kids are starting to ask me, Daddy, what's a gay?
Yeah, you should talk about that at a very young age, I would say.
So, on top of that, what about the television channels, the Filipino channel in specifics, where it's very common to have gays on TV, accepted, and even idolized in the world?
Yeah.
It's something that I'm very fearful of, because my kids are very close, and this is who my kids are growing up with, and I'm trying to encourage them to have relationships in the church, but I'm very cautious.
Well, yeah, let me react to that. I would say, first of all, which is more sinful? Sex between, you know, the opposite sex outside of marriage, or between the same sex outside of marriage? Which is more sinful? They're about equal. So I'd say I want to be careful about overreacting to homosexuality, because they're going to see adultery on a movie. In fact, is there such a thing as a movie that doesn't have adultery going on? So I don't think that if your kids are exposed to homosexual behavior in a particular entertainment situation, that's going to make them tempted to be homosexual. I kind of doubt that. So, you know, I think their sexual orientation is going to be determined by the relationship with you and the things you raise them with. So I don't think you need to worry about, you know, Filipino or not. I just don't see that their sexuality is going to be influenced by that. I don't think so. I think Christians in general kind of have this overreaction to that particular sin compared to other sins. That's my opinion. 3 weeks ago in San Diego, we had a Guy Hammond come there. And here's a guy who, he was a in-your-face homosexual for about 10 years, all the way through his teen years, till he was about 25, he became a Christian. And so he has some perspective for us, you know, that, you know, maybe we should treat people like that with love and, you know, welcome them into our home and that kind of stuff. And he, you know, as a married man, if he is attracted, after being married for 20-something years, if he's attracted, he's attracted to a guy. All right? And he's an evangelist and leading a church. So, you know, I don't know you should have your kids thinking that, you know, gays are somehow monsters with horns or something like that. They're just people like everybody else. I do think that probably people from that background have some particular issues they're going to have to deal with that are different than others. But, you know, I would say that sex between, you know, people not married of all sorts, you might want to treat them approximately equally, okay? And you should have a talk about homosexuality to your kids. Probably, unfortunately, the age you have to talk about that is getting younger and younger and younger. So that means you just talk about it younger. And you know, oh, that's gross and disgusting. I don't know. I mean, if that person you just call gross and disgusting walked into your house, would you call them gross and disgusting to their face? I don't think so. So, you know, I don't know exactly what to say about that. I would say somebody bought a copy of Guy Hammond's book. Who bought a copy of Guy Hammond's book? Carrying Beyond the Borders. Maybe was it one of the singles, I guess. All right. I wish I'd brought more copies with me, but I think somebody in the church should get a copy. Put that on the order, whoever's sending out to me. We'll send a few out. I think that would really help a lot in kind of dealing with the whole question of homosexuality. One of the classes we have, and you can get a copy of it, he gave an entire class on families and same-sex attraction. And here's a world expert, and you're asking me who knows almost nothing about it. So you might want to get a copy of our most recent conference from 3 weeks ago. It's already available at IPI. You might want to get a copy of that. And that talk that he gave about parents dealing with teens in the whole issue of homosexuality, I think that'd be a great one to get. Okay? But to summarize, you know, I'm not sure that gays are any more or less sinful than other people. They just, it's a different issue, and I think it is a harder issue, but I don't know. I'll stop there. Okay, I think I'd said I was going to take a question from you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the class and sharing from your personal experience. I know while you were teaching, you said it's relatively easy to raise kids.
Little kids.
Little kids that are not yet teenagers.
Yeah.
As compared to teenagers. I want to agree with you because I don't have a teenager yet. And I believe you've gone through all those stages, so you're talking from experience. But what I want to say is, can you please, maybe very quickly, give us tips for those of us who have kids who are yet to be teenagers? Some general tips you think we can. Because for me personally, I'm thinking, wow, my kids are not yet teenager, but I'm thinking it's already getting almost difficult for me.
Yeah.
So sort of continue. So
yeah.
Some general tips that can lead people like us.
Yeah, see, the thing is, if they'd asked me to teach a class on raising the little kids, I would have turned you down, because I feel like I don't know anything about that. It's been too long. By the way, let me explain myself. It's harder work to raise little kids. It's much harder work. It's just, you know, on the emotional end of things, it's the teenagers are harder. Yeah. That's too broad a question. I mean, then I'd have to do a whole class on raising little kids that I know, I don't have very good advice on that. Do you have a specific?
Not really.
All right. I would say, a really awesome relationship between mom and dad. Parents being really close to God. Humility. The parents changing, I don't think is nearly as much of an, not even nearly as much as an issue. And friendship with the kids, not nearly as much an issue. So I'd go back to the first 3 points, repeat those, and say, you need to be consistent.